Hey everybody, Aaron here. Before we get started today, I just wanted to make a special note that my tarantula, many of you are well aware of, Professor Dent, passed away this past week. And while it was upsetting and unexpected, it's, you know, certainly something I wanted to make note of because, hey, we've mentioned Professor Dent plenty of times on this show. I was very happy to have my tarantula, including the crickets being noisy in the background whenever that happened and what have you. But, like, it's always been a fun staple of the show to involve my tarantula in every way we can. I know certain listeners have certainly asked about it and whatnot. And while it's unfortunate news for me to have to share, I did want to point out that, hey, Professor Dent was my pet for 10 years, and I was very proud tarantula owner. And while it's, again, you know, it's difficult to process any kind of death when it comes to loved ones, pets, what have you, and not certainly not the first time on this show we've had to deal with something like this, I just wanted to make a note of it and let everybody know what happened to Professor Dent. But yes, may she rest in peace. And yeah, so again, just wanted to bring that up really quickly. And now let's get on with whatever silliness that we get into for this week's episode. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking From the World of John Wick, Ballerina.
I thought it was Tiny Dancer, but I guess I'm just wrong.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe, and I am Aaron, and always this is...
Abe, hello, how are you, Aaron?
I'm all right. People should have heard already things at the beginning of this episode, but we shall carry on because Out Now is a film. How are you doing? Let me ask you that. I'm sorry.
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Well, Out Now is a film podcast where Amy does us new movies weekly. We dig into film for you, most of the for your review, the occasional commentary track, or some other film movie topic. This is episode 624.
Apparently Western New York. So shout out to the Western New Yorkers out there.
Not the Eastern.
Nope. Not 212.
All right. This week we're talking From the World of John Wick, Ballerina, a title I will definitely use all the time when talking about this movie, because one word would not suffice for From the World of John Wick, Ballerina. And joining us to discuss From the World of John Wick, Ballerina, we have from Slash Film Weekly, Go Flix Yourself in the 10 to 1 podcast. I still owe him a marker. It's Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me. Actually, could you refer to me as From the World of Northwest Indiana?
Yes. Reverend Omen? Of course. We don't want to get murdered.
Yeah, we don't want to get murked.
Exactly.
But Brad, how are you doing?
Not too bad. How about you guys?
Good.
Well, thanks for asking.
Good to have you back on the show here. Excited to get into the world of John Wick with you. Well, let's do this. Let's get some show notes first. First up, new commentary track. We do commentaries every month on this podcast. And this month, in honor of the upcoming 28 years later, we'll be doing 28 days later, which should be a lot of... We got to put that in the books. We got to schedule when we're going to record that at some point. It's already the 8th.
We've got to... Yeah, we've got a few that we've got to record.
We got to fill out those forms. But yeah, that should be... I'm looking forward to talking about that movie.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to people getting to see that. It feels like... Brandy, have you noticed this? Like, that movie, it's old, but it's also, like, somewhat out of circulation. Do you think people are, like, a lot of people are coming to it for, like, the first time, or at least in a long time, in a while?
28 days later?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that for a little while, it wasn't easy to track down, right? It wasn't available digitally, and, like, the Blu-ray was kind of hard to get a hold of, so...
Yeah.
I feel like trying to watch if you hadn't seen it was probably difficult, because it wasn't, like, popping up on a stream where it's like, oh, right. Yeah, I haven't seen that in a while, so...
And it's not as though we, like, you know, tell people to go pirate things, because you wouldn't steal a car.
Exactly.
Thanks for the ad reminder of that. Which, on my 28 days later, which I proudly own.
Do they have that?
It probably has that ad on it.
Yeah, that's probably
true. It's one of those first wave Blu-rays, so it probably does have that old ad on it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, we're excited to talk about... I'm excited for all things 28 related, even a revival of the Sandra Bullock movie 28 Days. Whatever happens, I'm just down for it, apparently. But... What else? I mentioned Abe and I previously are going to team up with Mike Dillon once again for our contest winner to talk about a horror movie of their choosing, and we're going to be talking Scary Movie.
That's correct. Yeah, we announced it last week.
For its 25th anniversary, which is weird to think about.
Yeah.
Of course, the 13th annual Summer Movie Gamble. Oh, boy. Another week in our ongoing contest. Abe and I, of course, and Remy and other friends of the show, we've predicted the top 10 highest grossing films of the summer at the domestic box office. And this week, once again, Lilo and Stitch topped the game with another $32 million.
Again?
Sure has. 3 weeks in a row there. Number one. It's got $335 million so far.
All right. I made a mistake.
From the world of John Wick, called Ballerina, made $25 million in its opening debut number here, which is about on par with John Wick 2.
Right.
I was keeping track. Mission Impossible, Dash the Final Reckoning made another 15. It's at 149 total. Karate Kid Legends, 8.7 million. It's at 35. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
Final Destination continues to clean up. It's at 123 total. And not going to apply to this contest, but The Phoenician Scheme made $6 million this weekend. Not
pretty good.
Happy for a Wes Anderson movie going into wide release.
And it's like per theater average is pretty high.
It's all, that's nothing new. Like, we're always like flocking to like it because it's always in one. But yeah, 1,600 screens for Phoenician Scheme. It had, you know, made some money.
Get on it.
How is The Last Rodeo doing?
The Last Rodeo dropped out of the top 10 this week. It's in like somewhere in the teens. Made another 1 million. It's at 12.9 total. I will say this. I did not hate The Last Rodeo.
Yeah, I was like, Aaron reviewed it.
It's a perfectly movie movie.
My fiance was suckered into going to see this movie with her family. She hated it. She said there were so many shoddy green screen shots. The acting was terrible. And I was like, well, that's what you get.
You get before you consult Bradford Oman.
I think it satisfies a certain audience enough for what is compared to other movies of its ilk. I think it does things a little bit better, but if understandable.
No.
As far as Sinner's Watch goes, because we do like to keep our eye on Sinners, even though it has no bearing on this contest whatsoever, another 2 million, 2.9 million, so 272. It's, I believe, in like the, it's some, what list is it in of like?
Like the top 10 highest grossing like horror movies or something like that?
Like horror movies of all time. It's coming very close to being in that top 10, which is like,
right. Yes.
I was worried. I thought Sinner's Watch was going to be something where we had to confess, so that's huge relief.
Do you have your secular rosary that's like diamond filled and jade filled?
Yes.
My personal Sinner's Watch is where Variety puts an all cap tweet that says "Mea culpa, we were wrong to question this." But I don't know if they're gonna. I don't know if they're going to do that anytime soon. All right. That's enough box office talk. Last thing, iTunes reviews and ratings, of course. If you like our show, if you like to follow along and see all the episodes, you can do that. And while you're there, you can give us a rating and review. It should be great. Pop us on the old iTunes charts.
Thank you so much in advance.
All right. Let's move on. Now. Let's get to our... let's talk about cookies.
Trademark.
You tweet out now. We with we with our cookies.
DM. It's pretty good.
Brad, what other movies have you watched recently?
Hold on, you guys got that copyrighted and trademarked?
According to Abe,
our lawyer is very busy.
Amazing. This podcast has grown since I've been on.
What have you been watching recently, Brad?
What I have been watching recently. So I actually watched something that is premiering tonight. What's today? June 8th.
Yeah.
At the Tribeca Film Festival, Long Live the State is a new documentary about the State sketch comedy group that was on MTV in the 90s and kind of a big deal for a little while. It's a very cool documentary. I don't think it has distribution. I think it's just playing at the festival for now, but I hope it gets it because it is a fascinating portrait into the creation of the State and their evolution and their sudden rise and then tragic fall. Even though everyone in the State kind of went on to be very successful in their own right, but it gives a very honest recounting of like the things that happened and like what people were frustrated by and what kind of went wrong and even some of like the rifts that happened for years after the State was over. So it's a pretty basic in its presentation, doesn't reinvent the wheel as far as doing anything stylish or anything like that. But they got everybody from the original group to talk about it and be very open. So yeah, as a fan of the State and sketch comedy in general, it was really enjoyable to watch.
Glad to hear.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And then, so this is, you guys do TV on here?
Yeah, of course. Report.
So I've recently gotten into Last One Laughing. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
Which one's that?
So Last One Laughing, it initially started as a show called Documental in Japan. And the premise is they take 10 comedians and put them in a room for 6 hours, and the last one to make to laugh wins.
What?
So there's, there's an American version of that now?
No, there's not an American version. It's actually surprising that America hasn't jumped on it yet, but but I guess Prime Video jumped on it and they started creating versions in other countries.
Okay.
And the first one I watched is the most recent version, which is in the UK. It's hosted by Jimmy Carr, and it has this exact same premise, and it is hilarious to watch. And then now I'm watching the Canadian version, which was back in 2022. It was hosted by Jay Baruchel and has people like Colin Mockery and stuff on it. And there are versions all over. There's Mexico, there's France, there's Australia, there's Ireland, which is hosted by Graham Norton. And so I'm kind of digging into this.
This sounds fantastic.
Yeah,
immediately.
It's really fun.
It's really funny.
It is. It's really fun to watch. The British one is the only one I've seen in full so far. I just started the Canadian one, but the British one is hilarious, and it's a lot of fun. So then they're all on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
This is why I bring Brad on here, to get the good recommends.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of these other guests are really slacking in the recommends they bring.
he's also got that Prime, you know, subscription. You know, he's got money to blow.
What can I say?
Not having Prime is just irresponsible. You get a whole streaming service and free shipping. It's a great deal.
One or 2 day shipping, sometimes overnight.
And then I've seen Predator: Killer of Killers, which is fantastic. It's on Hulu now. Takes a little bit of a cue from Predators and ramps it up with an animated kind of anthology style thing. Very cool expansion of the mythology, super stylish, visually, stunning animation, and just a lot of killer Predator action, which is exactly what you want from a movie called Predator: Killer of Killers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I recommended this last week. I got to see it at the Egyptian Theater of all places.
And how dare you see it in theater?
I know. I wish I could have seen it in theater. It would have been so fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go one step further and say not only did I see it, but I ran into Dan Trachtenberg. It was great.
Oh, like, I thought you were going to say you ran into a real Predator.
They had a real Predator there. They had a life-size statue of one.
You never know. It could have been camouflaged. Could have been just watching from the ceiling.
There's a picture of me in front of the show, Bill Bria, with the Predator. So, I mean, yes.
Fellow slash film writer.
I mean, you're the reason Bill and I are good friends now. We hang out all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So.
Also, by the way, just as a tip, always assume there's a cloaked Predator where you are.
Oh, yeah. No, that's why I assume Ant-Man's always in the room with me.
Yeah. I walk into a room and I just start slicing with a sword around and waiting to see if I hit it. And so,
if something green pops out, you know you got it.
If it bleeds,
you can kill it.
All right. Abe, what have you been watching recently?
A couple things I want to make note of. I also watched Predator: Killer of Killers. Really fun, really cool. Just like what Brad said. Really stylish. I really dig the vibe that it's going for, which is, you know, anthology like what Brad was saying, but also it allows you to see Predator doing some really cool stuff, and multiple Predators, different kinds of Predators, and also different kinds of other hunters. But I really dug that it's almost like Animatrix style, where it's like, hey, let's use anime for this really cool style of action and gore and, you know, storytelling. Power to Guillermo del Toro for, you know, telling us that animation is a medium. The other movie that I want to make note of is The Phoenician Scheme, which are we going to talk about this more later in a special, Aaron?
I think we can.
Okay. I will save my thoughts later.
Okay. Yeah. That's you. You're good.
Yep.
All right. I kind of realized this as I was making my list of quickies this week, but
trademark.
Thank you. It's June, which means it's Pride Month. So happy Pride.
Yes.
I have a number of Pride themed movies or things that I've seen. First is a film called I Don't Understand You. It's Nick Kroll and Andrew Rannells as a couple who are trying to adopt. In this case, they're adopting from Amanda Seyfried, who's like in the film via Zoom mostly. But before they get the new child, they decide to go on an Italian vacation. And they do. And what starts as like a kind of bickering comedy between these two very funny people turns into like a horror thriller it turns into a means of, they run into scenarios where bad things keep happening around them. Not in like a film like Tucker and Dale versus Evil, where it's not that there's like organic horror taking place. It's more someone accidentally dies, or they happen to drive to the wrong place at the wrong time, and like comedic misunderstandings happen that from another angle would be a horror movie, but from this angle, it's just like a weird comedy of errors.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite good. I really enjoyed this a lot. It's very fun. Kroll and Rhett, like, obviously they've done things together before, like they're on Big Mouth among other things together. But yeah, it's very fun.
Season 8 out now.
Yeah, the final season.
Final season.
The final reckoning. But it's a fun movie. I enjoyed this one quite a bit.
Cool.
I also watched Jared Carmichael's latest comedy special, Don't Be Gay.
I didn't know he had a new one out.
It's on Max. Oh. The one to watch. But it's if you like Jared Carmichael, solid comedy special. It's quite fun. It's more funny with less introspection, if that makes sense. Like, I know his previous one was Rathaniel.
Yeah.
Obviously that was him coming out, but also it's very, there's humor in it, but it certainly is a lot of him storytelling and doing stuff that's not inherently laugh out loud funny. This one's a lot more like jokes per minute by comparison.
Got it.
And,
okay.
And it's quite effective. I like his stand up. So, you know.
Yeah.
And last thing in this realm of things I've watched, Pee Wee Herman as himself.
Yes. Okay. The doc.
The two part Max doc. It's HBO Max. Again, we got to remember that. The two part HBO Max documentary.
My app still says Max. So that's what I'm calling it.
My Roku does too, still. Also, and I will not update it.
Never. If they make us download a new app again, like they did last time, I'm going to be pissed.
Wasn't that annoying? It could just like change the logo. They had to like do a whole
new. Yeah. The whole new app.
Anyway, I watched Pee Wee Herman as himself featuring Paul Reubens. What I like about this is it's not just like a hagiography of everything Pee Wee Herman and Paul Reubens related. What it is he was working with these interviewers for a good long time. They got like 40 hours of interviews with them. And the whole time he didn't tell them that he was battling cancer. Like this was not a thing that they knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, he's not one that tends to kind of put himself in the spotlight in a way where he's just talking about who he is and where he comes from and all that. So in addition to actually doing that, which he does, he's spending a lot of time messing with the interviewers or having a lot of fun with it. Not necessarily being like an unreliable narrator, but certainly like poking fun at the process in a way that I found to be really endearing, honestly. Uh-huh. Like it's very fun to see him being self-aware of what's going on with this kind of documentary format and having a little bit of fun with that. So it's like, heartfelt it obviously is, and like sad to an extent it is, because you just know like where things are going and you understand that he knows he's sick and they don't. It is a lot of fun to engage with as well. It's set in two parts. The first part's like the origins of Pee-wee leading up to Pee-wee's Big Adventure. The second part is the show that leads to his difficulties with you know, various controversial things that happened in his life, and and his main objective was obviously to set the record straight about what's actually happening and why he was not necessarily targeted, but certainly like ridiculed and what have you. It puts a lot of clarity in mind for those that just frankly don't know, which often happens when it comes to people like this. You think of them more as a punchline as opposed to an actual person that has reasons for why things happen the way they did. But it's very effective. It's very affecting. It's well made. I enjoyed this quite a bit. As one that did watch Pee-wee's Playhouse when I was, you know, a child. So, like, it was neat to have this kind of epilogue to this man.
Word of the day, epilogue. Yay!
So, it was good stuff. I enjoyed this one. A few other things. I watched The Ritual. That's the super popular, hugely buzzy Al Pacino exorcism movie that we are all talking about.
Oh, okay. I was like, The Ritual from, like, Norway from 2018?
No, not the Rafe Spall Netflix horror movie that has some good creature design.
Yeah.
But no, the Dan Stevens Al Pacino exorcism movie that, again, people can't stop talking about. it was a movie that I watched.
Okay.
And then it ended.
Moving on.
Really, that's all I got to say. Like, it's not particularly good. It's not particularly well acted. I can appreciate Al Pacino didn't, like, go wildly over the top, as it actually just plays it very subdued.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
It's kind of like in a world where we have Russell Crowe rolling around on a moped, go beep beep, and like exercising people.
I am the Vatican's Pope.
Yeah, there's no hoo-ha.
The power of Christ compels you.
Exactly.
Hoo-ha.
It's pretty. The movie could have used that juice, honestly. And instead, you just have Al Pacino kind of. He's doing German. He's doing German accent. So he's got
German accent. Interesting.
And Dan Stevens just plays like wet blanket where he's like, there's no demons. It's just a show. I don't believe
British,
anything.
British Dan Stevens or American?
He's very British.
Okay.
Yeah, right. He's not doing Italian or something like that. but no, it's a
nothing. You can probably do it.
It's a nothing movie. I've made it sound more interesting than it is, honestly.
Got like, it. Okay. Not,
I watched Mountain Head. Have you watched Mountain Head?
No, but I've heard about it.
That's the HBO one. It's from Jesse Armstrong, who created Succession. It features Steve Carell, Rami, Jason Schwartzman, and what's his name? Corey Michael Smith.
Him.
And they're all like tech billionaires who go on this retreat up at Schwartzman's aptly named Mountain Head, which is like a play on Ayn Rand's Fountainhead. Regardless, it's like it's a chamber comedy satire thing, which they're all set in one place and they're all debating stuff that's going on while the world is kind of like having a crisis going on around it. I didn't like this movie very much. I feel like what Succession does well is has a lot of time to endear you to characters that are not inherently likable, where this movie tries to do that within 2 hours, and I just hated all of them, and the satire wasn't biting enough for me to be like, I get that it's a bit or whatnot, nor did I think the kind of natural screen charisma is not the same for these guys compared to others, and I think it could have pulled it off better.
I've kind of heard the same, where it's like mixed bag. People are kind of like,
yeah. Someone I know saw it, said that it was really dense as well, and it's kind of hard to get a grasp on like what it is that they're talking about, and like really understand what's going on and why you should even care.
Yeah, it doesn't balance the satire with the mechanics of what it is well enough to like work, and these actors who are, mostly good, like there's nothing wrong with what they're doing, but they don't have enough time to really layer in like how it works.
Yeah, I kind of heard that again, like some of the bite that Jesse had with Mark Mylod just isn't really there for this one.
The last thing I watched that I'll mention real quick is called So Torn.
Werewolf movie?
Spelled so as an S-E-W.
Not a werewolf movie.
This is a cool, cool movie that I really liked and want more people to see. It comes out to digital this week, I believe. It was in theaters briefly in May. But it's a story that's not unlike a Run, Lola, Run type of story.
Interesting.
Like, it's kind of a sliding door. I've mentioned two movies now. But like a sort of multiple possibilities movie. As opposed to like an anthology or time loop, it's more of a what if this version happened, or this version, or this version? And it involves a seamstress who runs across a drug deal gone wrong. And she thinks of it as like three different ways I could pursue this. So, like I could either like get involved, not get involved, or I could do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And what's cool, beyond like just the quirkiness of it as far as like what's involved, the fact that she's a seamstress plays heavily into the film, where her abilities to sew somehow factor in each way, and they're all cool each time you see them. Like, it's hard to describe without like seeing it, but like it has a really cool trailer, like, which doesn't give away too much, so I'd say like watch the trailer because it's pretty cool. But it's very clever and very well made. I like this one quite a bit. It's largely a UK cast. It's an indie movie. It's not like it has a lot, like there's some people you might recognize, but like it's not a huge star-studded film or anything, but it's stylish without like Run, Lola, Run's very kinetic. Obviously it's very like on the move.
Sure.
This one doesn't have that kind of thing going for it, but it does have a sort of a dark whimsy to it that I really appreciated. So it's a good one. I was happy to catch up with this one for sure.
Cool. Sounds great.
Yeah.
So there you Where'd go. You catch that one again?
I got a screener for it, but it comes to digital this I think it's on digital now, actually. I think it comes out like it's now.
Roger.
So Torn. All right. That's enough cookies.
Trademark.
Let's move on. Let's get to our trailer talk. We're talking about one of the newest movies of the week, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, when have you. We have Wicked : For Good this week, the sequel or part two of Wicked. This is, of course,
I think we should just call it Dead Reckoning. Final Reckoning.
Wicked the Final Reckoning.
Wicked Final Reckoning. Yeah.
Wicked Final Reckoning. Here it is.
We're going to start this change right now.
The way that I always hear this title is Michael Scott on The Office. There's the episode where he comes back after he thinks he's going to get a promotion and is like, no, Pam, I am back for good.
Now it's going to be stuck in my head.
Well, here we are. We have the second half of Wicked. It's everybody's back, obviously, because they, I think, shot these at the same time. John M. Chu still directing. Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande. I don't know this story. So, like, I'm still maintaining this, like, I don't want to know where it goes. I'm looking forward to seeing like how this thing ends. But like, are there new characters? Does anyone know? Are there like other people that are going to be added to this?
It's been so long since I've seen Wicked on Broadway that I don't remember if there are new characters, but you'll definitely see familiar characters that you only very briefly saw in the first movie that you might recognize from The Wizard of Oz.
That's the like based on the trailer. It like seems to have more Oz in it than I really realized it would happen. So I'm very curious on that front where things are going. But with all that said, I liked Wicked. I look forward to this new one. Brad, how about you? Are you looking forward to Wicked for good?
Yeah. You know, part of me wishes that they just made one movie because it didn't really need to be split into two. They could have just made, you know, one long movie. Probably would have been better. I liked the first Wicked pretty well enough. I felt like it dragged a little bit in the middle and then it picked it up in the back half and ended on a solid note. And yeah, I'm curious to see how they do this second half of the story, because it's when it starts to weave into the events of The Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how much you get to see of The Wizard of Oz from the other perspectives with the story that's unfolding in Wicked for Good. So, yeah, it looks, you know, on par with the first one. You know, I think Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo were great in the original. And, yeah, I'm curious to see how it ends up.
Abe?
Yeah, it looks like Wicked Part 2. Like, there's not a whole lot of other things that I could really say about it because it's the continuation, same director. Again, they shot it like back to back, basically, and or not even back to back. I think it's just like shot all at once and they decided to make Part 2 out of it, right? I have heard that, yeah, they're going to add maybe a couple new songs from the person who helped write the songs for Broadway, which is great, but it doesn't, like, I think I was lesser on it than Aaron was when it came out, but I'm curious to see how the story unfolds because I have only read the book. I've never seen the stage adaptation. So curious to see where it all goes.
Yeah. I do like as far as a trailer goes, I think it's a really good trailer. I think it really sells more of this in a way that I wasn't necessarily like, I don't think anyone's sitting there being like, well, no need to see the next one. It's like it kind of sells itself.
We have to know how it ends.
In that regard. But I think just in terms of trailer construction, I think it does a pretty good job of being like, this thing's coming, these things are in it, but we're not going to tell you too much about what happens, which I think is a good standard basis for trailers as far as how to sell a movie at you goes.
I was kind of surprised it was as long as it was for a teaser trailer. So. Sure.
Which, again, the fact that it really didn't tell me too much about what's actually happening, I was impressed by. Because, like, I did see the runtime of the trailer. I was like, that's a lot of movie to pack into this. And it's like, oh, well, there's more of this. So, well, we shall see, I guess. New songs and all that. That's great for people, I'm sure. And see what happens. Wicked for Good arrives in theaters November 21st. So, this Thanksgiving. Okay, Wicked again.
Is that what they say?
That's what I'll say.
Okay, all right.
Would you like to get Wicked?
So we got Wicked, Wicked Final Reckoning, and whatever your tagline was.
Well, there's also Wake Up Dead Man, A Final Reckoning, Knives Out, Mystery. I think that's
I'm so ready for that one. I hope I get to catch it in theaters for the 7 days that it's available.
The days Netflix threatens to release it for you. All right. That's our trailer. Let's move on. Let's get to our main review for From the World of John Wick, : Ballerina.
To stop the assassin, you must become the assassin. You will always be weaker. You will always be smaller. You want to win? Improvise. Adapt. Cheat.
Welcome to the Continental.
Eve Macaro, the Ruscaroma. What a pleasure to see you again.
All right, that should be so the trailer for From the World of John Wick Ballerina. We know how things went with John Wick. It went from nearly being a DTV release to becoming a four-film franchise that grew in box office results and critical acclaim each time out. Given the popularity of the series, as well as the growth of the interior world of John Wick, developing a spinoff made sense. So, equipped with a script that was retrofitted to be set in the world, we now have Ballerina, Anna de Armas stars as Eve Macaro, a woman whose father was murdered by a cult, leading to her be raised by a Russian outfit of assassins. Once trained enough, she decides to go against others' wishes and get her revenge on those who did her wrong, learning more about her past in the process, as well as putting herself in the sights of the Baba Yaga himself. Brad, where have you been with the John Wick franchise? What'd you think of this spin-off entry?
I'm definitely a big fan of the John Wick franchise. I have loved it even more as each new chapter has come out. It's been great to see a very simplistic action movie expand its world and mythology and become something really big and cool, and especially really like carve out a unique, you know, kind of visual style all its own, along with some outstanding fight choreography and cool weapon combat that we don't really see often in American movies anymore, without tons of, you know, computer generated effects and digital imagery. So the John Wick franchise has been something to behold, and it's really one of the great action franchises of the 21st century. So yeah, that's where I'm at with John Wick. And then with Ballerina, I had fun for the most part. I don't think this is a particularly great movie, but I think that the action is fantastic, on par with the John Wick movies. I think the story is pretty basic, and the villains are completely forgettable. Perhaps its biggest flaw is that putting it in the John Wick universe means that everything in it is pretty much insignificant and inconsequential to the rest of the John Wick franchise, except for the character of Eve Macaro, because they can't change anything. They can't introduce anything that isn't referenced in John Wick 4, since it takes place between the third and fourth movie. So you have to create something that's like, okay, so it's something that feels threatening, but doesn't actually have any impact on John Wick as a character at all. And that's a big problem, I think, that doesn't work. I think that the first 20 minutes are pretty clunky, and I was like, oh, okay, I've seen Black Widow. I don't need to see this. but once it gets going, it has a lot of momentum. Ana de Armas is a certified badass in the role. Like, she's outstanding. The action is superb. What they do with both grenades and flamethrowers is outstanding in this movie. So I had a good time watching it. It has flaws for sure, and it's not as good as any of the John Wick movies, but I enjoyed watching it.
Abe, how about you?
John Wick has been a favorite of mine for quite a while. I remember watching the first John Wick in theaters back when it first came out, and just having a great time with the audience, just, you know, saying ooh and ah and holy shit, and just, you know, knives in people's faces and stuff like that is great. And as the franchise has continued to grow and expand, I've been pleasantly and then very surprised by how good it has been, because they're putting the money on the screen. They're creating this world, this underworld, I should say, of assassins and contract killers, with their own set of rules that keep like expanding, but they're all very interesting. And the stories keep on enticing you, because John Wick is such he's a fairly well-known figure, but he still has like some pathways that maybe you don't know all about, which I think lends itself to allowing them to write more things for his background and his future, which is great. But we'll see how that part goes. As far as Ballerina goes, I would say that it took a little bit for it to pick up, so very in line with Brad on the beginning things. But once it does, I think it actually pretty much rips. Like, I think the things that rip the most are the action sequences and the way that they've set designed it. I was curious as to how they were going to, not so much like one up John Wick the franchise, but just what they were going to do differently, because I was also very much in the same thought of like, well, you can't just have like a female John Wick. Like, there has to be like something else with it too. And you know, it's not that Eve is forgettable. It's just more that like Eve doesn't really have a whole lot to do, but what they set up around her is pretty neat. Like, I really like the conceit that they had there of, you know, where she has to go in the third act and what she has to do. Cause I wasn't sure either. Cause I was like, well, this cult seems like it's just like a faction that is rivaling the cult or the group that she's a part of. But in actuality, it's like, it's a little bit deeper, but not that deep. Cause I would agree that, you know, the big bad lack of motivation, but just more like, I don't really know anything about this cult, and I don't really know anything about Gabriel Byrne and what they're all up to. But the action sequences in that third act are pretty great, and they did manage to wow me in a couple of the scenes, which I was not expecting at all, because I was just thinking, let's give me some gung-fu type of stuff. And the action sequences, or I'm sorry, the action stunts are going to be great because they actually have real fighters in these things. But overall, like, I think it's an enjoyable watch. It does add a little bit to it. I think that I'd be curious to see where more things might, what more things might transpire out of the world of John Wick. But I think to Brad's point, if you're going to make it take place also in parallel with the John Wick actual plot line, that's a little bit tough because you have to all of a sudden start making details matter.
Yeah, I for one thing, I didn't find much depth in this at all, which is kind of my issue with it. Like, I do think it's enjoyable as an action piece, but as far as anything the John Wick films are doing, where I think the layman may want to boil it down to, like, there's just a guy going after the guy who killed his dog. But I mean, that's a whole series that's built upon a variety of themes involving grieving and consequences and balance and all these different things that I think it wisely explores without making it, without highlighting the subtext too much, where this film feels like what people would assume John Wick is, where it's just like, it's just whatever action movie.
Yeah.
That's the shame of this one. Like, it doesn't have anything really to offer beyond revenge, and there is a woman. It's like, well, I've seen that a lot. I mean, that's not anything new, but yeah, sure, it looks better because it's shot better, or at least has better choreography and what have you, and Chad Stahelski had to come in and do research to make it better than it was. But, like, on an overall level, sure, I can agree with you guys that I think it's fine action filmmaking. Like, it does that as well as it can do within the circumstances. I wasn't expecting Wes Anderson to give this movie a run for its money when it came to grenades, but that's a different story.
Help us serve the hand grenade.
The creativity of the fights is really the highlight of this,
no question,
because everything else I was just kind of whatever on. Like, even on an Armas, who I get that, like, she's supposed to be stoic, so she can't be, like, fun in the same way she was in No Time to Die, which is where I think a lot of people were like, oh yeah, this is like beyond like Knives Out, where she's very good in. This is like a set piece for her to just like kick ass and have a lot of fun while doing it. This movie doesn't afford her that kind of an opportunity. Like, she gets to have some quips here or there, or at least like acknowledge that it's cool to be doing some of the stuff she's doing, where John Wick can't even do that because he's just pretty much set on his path. But it does, if I'm like trying to like assess this as, does this make like a movie star performance out of her? I don't know. And having Keanu Reeves there doesn't help either, because, like, well, there's a movie star. Like, so, like, I can't. It's hard to, like, it was hard for me to get a grip on not her capability, because she's good in this movie, but, like, would I want to watch more movies featuring her as ballerina, I guess, is my main question. And I don't think I left this movie thinking I was more convinced that I definitely need her specifically to be the star of a new franchise set in this world. Would I like other things to be set in this world? Perhaps. I don't know. As a test case for this, it's fine. Again, the action's very good. It's creative. There's a dueling flamethrower sequence that I think was pretty much the most badass thing I've seen in the past couple months. So it's like,
no, right, but like, also like her second weapon of choice later in that fight too is pretty cool.
There's cool, like, yeah, like I said, there's cool action in here. And right. I feel like I wanted to like this movie more than I was, and largely because I just didn't care about the story taking place. Like you said, yeah. Brad, I think setting it within the timeline didn't do it any favors, because I think Wick has two big moments in this film, and like, one is early on where I thought it made sense, mainly because he's telling her, don't do this, that's a bad idea. But the second time he comes in, it's like, this feels like we just shoved this in because we needed like more trailer shots. Like, it doesn't feel like there's any,
yeah,
like there's literally no need for him to be in this part of the, and then the fact that he's more involved to a degree also made, I don't know, like, I don't care much for like the, and like, even like her motivation for doing this, a smarter movie I think would have her at least reckon with the fact that the thing that she's doing is like, the reason she's on this path of revenge is for the like the stuff that she's doing now. So it's like, movies think about this. Yeah. There's more to do there that would be interesting to explore, but it doesn't. It just is like, no, I'm just gonna kill a bunch of people and whatever. Also, Gabriel Byrne sucks in this movie. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh, he's like Diet Christoph Waltz in this movie.
He's nothing in this.
I think like Ultra Diet.
And I like Gabriel Byrne, so I'm like, I thought like he'd try to look, but it really feels like he's just like, oh, they sent me to Europe for fun, so whatever.
Yeah.
They also don't really give him much to do though, so I'm not entirely sure it's his fault.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, he's a professional actor. I get that, but as it stands, the one I watched wasn't good. That's my take on it.
Yeah.
Angelica Houston's fine. Even when she's chomping on a giant cigar, I'm like, all right, good for you. You got
not a whole lot for her to do either, though.
She got a good fit. She got to wear that wig. Like, I'm not against it. Like,
okay. So Gabriel Gordon had a wig on.
She at least seems like she's having fun being seated and saying the line she's saying.
Yeah. Right? Actually, honestly, if Gabriel Byrne did have a wig on, especially that wig, that would have made it infinitely better. Don't comment on it. Don't say anything about it. Just wear that wig.
If they just left him with his Irish accent, that'd be even better.
He's the Irish head of the Russian cult.
Yeah, but they give him like a German, Baltic accent.
Yeah, so it. Adam, I mean, yeah. So like other things here, like Norman Reedus is like, that's interesting.
Oh, I forgot.
In a movie, right. But he's severely underused. I'm like,
yeah. That felt like a setup for like a sequel.
Yeah,
it did. And I'm like, are we compelled enough by this guy? Like, I'm glad he was on breaks from Walking Dead to do this, but that's whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, like I said, I think that I, as a piece of action, there's worse ways you can spend 2 hours. It's fine, but it doesn't do much for you on that.
I will say one thing that I appreciated about how they used John Wick, even though it didn't feel like it worked quite so well. Mm-hmm. I was glad that they didn't make Eve Macaro an equal badass him. Oh, yeah, she can match John Wick. It's like no one can. I'm glad that she still got her ass kicked and like Keanu Reeves was trying to get her to stop all the time. It wasn't like she matched him punch for punch or anything like that. They made her flawed and like she wasn't obviously a match for him at all.
Yeah, I did enjoy that aspect of it too, which is like it's an imbalance of power, and it should be that way because John Wick is just, there's so much mythos around him, around the Baba Yaga and killing people with a pencil, three people with a pencil. So it was fun to see them kind of like wrestling a bit, but he's always like getting the upper hand because he's just a better assassin.
He's the Baba Yaga.
Exactly, yeah, and everybody knows of him, which is actually still cool. But I would agree with you guys that in the first segment where you see him, I was like, oh, that's cool, he just makes a cameo, and everything was like kind of like fluff, right? All the social media was like, oh yeah, he's really in this movie. It's like, no, it's cool. They kind of decided to go their own route, but he does have a larger role, which is not a bad thing. It's just more like it. Yeah, I would agree. It kind of takes away from Eve's story. So it's like, it's cool to see this, but I've seen him before.
I know you avoid trailers for the most part, but like he's been heavily marketed in Lionsgate in all of the stuff he's doing. It was not a surprise to see him pop up. I knew he's going to pop up again. Yeah. Like they've like comically advertised him.
I think in the teaser trailer that I saw, it's only the first sequence that they kind of talk about.
Yeah. And what I mean, like Reggie, like incorporating him. Like, do I mind seeing Keanu Reeves in his role in this movie? No, but like, given the time jumps this movie makes, like having that first appearance makes sense. And you could like just jump ahead past the time, past 3 and 4, and just not worry about it anymore. But no, they're like, we gotta have some weird thing where apparently in between 3 and 4, he's like, hold on, guys, I gotta go to Austria so I can have an action sequence with another character.
It did make me think back to like 3 and 4. Like, when did he have a time window for this? Because wasn't he like always like
there's
on the run?
There's time between 3 and 4 because 3, he's like basically underground at that point. Like, 3,
okay. The big question is, how does Angelica Houston know to get a hold of him?
That's true. Yeah,
because he's supposed to be presumed dead,
or at least just.
Yeah, he's hanging out with like Lawrence Fishburne in the swamp, right?
Yeah,
like and like how, and let alone how would she convince, like his marker is paid or whatever? Like,
he turned in. Yeah, exactly.
These are questions for the world of John Wick.
Yeah, it's like we know too much about the world. I have a question for you guys. Did they augment the title to have the world of John Wick, or was it always the title?
It's always been like that in the marketing, but like they've never like really said it out loud in that way. Everyone's just calling it Ballerina. It's just like Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Ah, got it. Okay. Where friendship becomes like the main motivator. Yeah.
The way to solve their problem. Yeah. The main thing is that it's in the front of the title, which makes it especially hilarious. It's not Ballerina from the world of John Wick. It's from the world of John Wick Ballerina, which is like, that's a choice.
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, I guess it makes sense. I want to ask you, Brad, about some of the clunkiness that you kind of experienced in the first half. Was it just more like the setup that they were bad with, or the writing, or what was it?
I mean, yeah, a little of both. Like, just because like it's the most basic origin story. It's like, yeah, she's a ballerina, but it's a front for assassins, and she has revenge. Like, it's almost like the exact same thing as the origins of Black Widow, just without a family who was an assassin alongside her. So, like,
it's a lot of movies. It's a lot of revenge movies.
Yeah, tons of them. You know, that's just the most, you know, recent one that it feels so close to, especially because she's Russian, and you know, it's just like the exact same.
Wait, she's supposed to be Russian?
Or sorry, it's like the whole Russian frame of like the ballerina stuff and everything like that.
Like,
but yeah,
Hassan made that one movie too. That's like pretty much the exact same thing. What's that movie called?
Where she's a Russian killer.
She's like a model. She's like a Russian model.
I forget.
Anna.
Two N's.
So that was really what it was for me. It's just like, yeah, we've seen this. Let's just get through the motions and just get going here. Going back to the whole John Wick arrival thing, the one thing I won't ever be mad at is henchmen saying out loud that they're worried about John Wick. Like, hearing somebody be like, John Wick's here. And it's like, fuck.
that is like a really good, you know, fun little, not even Easter egg. It's just everybody knows of John Wick by this point. My audience clapped whenever he showed up on screen, which I thought was really fun. Because they're like, it's cool that John Wick has gotten so much, I guess, fame at this point. Because again, when the first one came out, pretty quiet movie outing, and then it just became like a cult hit. And I'm glad, but people love John Wick.
Well, yeah, they made exponentially more money each time. Like, it's a hit. We have a spinoff. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
It's not even like didn't match up expectations. It's like I feel like I felt nothing leaving the theater watching it, where it's like, I didn't want to feel that way.
Also, Aaron, you touched upon something earlier too, is Eve McCarroll as a character doesn't really get to be fun in the way that John Wick is. And some of John Wick's fun comes from Keanu Reeves's delivery of lines, which may not always intentionally be funny, but it makes certain lines funny because, like, he's being intimidating, but he's also being Keanu Reeves. But
there's
like
a rhythm to how he speaks.
Yeah, and like that, this one was missing. While the action was fun, it was missing like certain comedic beats without being like obvious comedic beats. I think it could have used a little more of that.
Which is why, like, I think the action is very competent and very creative. There's some really cool stuff she does as far as how she dispatches enemies using just grenades and flashbangs and whatnot.
Yeah,
but. Right. Because there's not more of that, like, that quirkiness that kind of sticks it all together, I don't know if I'm going to remember much of that action by the time it's done. Where I can remember things from John Wick because there's beats that play with it that go along with the action. Where
like especially when he's, like, getting armed up, you know? Like, those exchanges are always hilarious.
Right, yeah.
And I will say, I did like seeing Ian McShane and Lance Reddick in here. That was fun.
I was actually not expecting Lance, because I thought his last filming was for the fourth one.
You got to remember, this movie got delayed a year. Presumably, they filmed this a year before that. So, like, there's been a lot of... Because my dad asked me this thing, what we were watching, and my dad came with me to the movie. He liked it. He enjoyed it. But he was like, when did they film this? I was trying to, like, whisper, explain to him what's going on while we're watching the movie. He's like, I'm so confused right now. Didn't he die?
Because, like, for the shot, reverse shot, I was like, is that even Ana de Armas, like, standing in front of Lance Reddick right now? Or is that just, like, a stand-in? But... that makes sense, because I definitely was not thinking that they AI'd him in or they CGI'd him in. Like, it's definitely Lance Reddick, but I was like, when did they film this?
It's just been a while since they were able to get this done.
E. McShane does look younger in this movie than he does in the fourth one, so I guess that tracks. I want to ask you guys around, I guess we all kind of discussed it, but has there been rumblings about more projects in the world of John Wick? Because I know that there was the TV series, The Continental, but is there more trade talk around other, not even characters, but like new characters that people are going to be talking about, making movies about?
Well, The Continental was canceled. They did one season of that on Peacock. Because even though Peacock is one of the most popular streaming services of all time, it just didn't catch the audience anymore. That's a sentence I tried. John Wick 5 is officially confirmed. As far as other spinoffs go, all I think we have is that Ana de Armas has said we'd like to make more. I think that's about it.
There's also an animated John Wick prequel that's in the works. And then also they've talked about doing, I think, a spinoff for Donnie Yen's Kane from
he wants to direct it. That's the other
he does.
He's planning to direct that movie.
Okay. I wasn't sure if Timo, what's his face, was part of that project, but yeah.
Timo's busy.
He's doing a lot of remakes right now. Yeah.
Okay, you know who I wish they would get to do a John Wick movie is Gareth Evans.
Yeah.
That'd be
put them all together.
Yeah, because we just talked about his Netflix movie like not that long ago.
Yeah, which I was a little disappointed in, but it doesn't mean that The Raid and The Raid 2 aren't still awesome and he would do incredible things with John Wick.
Yeah, exactly. I think the most mad I was about his Netflix release was I was like, oh, we're never going to get The Raid 3. So
such a bummer.
Yeah. I'm never going to know how that brotherhood ends up. But yeah, I'm curious around, I guess, other parts of it, but I also was not sure about the ending of this movie. Not that I'm going to spoiler territory, but just more like, oh, well, I mean, it's just John Wick all over again. Like, so I'm not exactly sure how this actually pans out. Cause if she's not as competent as John Wick, and everybody in the city is looking for her. She's only
growing in skill, you know.
She's obviously already very good. And plus, like, at some point, I feel like every assassin in the John Wick universe probably ends up having a bounty on their head.
Yeah. this is true. Yeah.
You're lame if you don't have a bounty on your head, honestly.
Frank, you've never even had a bounty. Fuck you, Carl.
Carl!
Way to go. You've done your job respectably all your life.
Your bounty was only $50,000. No one cared.
$50,000 is really nothing, yeah. I don't think anyone's picking up that contract.
As far as, like, future endeavors with specifically Eve, I wouldn't mind. If anything, I'd probably be more excited about it just because it got out of the way, the boring revenge stuff that I don't really care about. It probably wouldn't be heavily focused on, let's have John Wick make a cameo so it could just kind of be its own movie, you know what I'm saying? Sure. So, like, if it combines that with a either good director or just a, you know, good handle on the action, I, you know, ideally they also have, like, because I feel like I require, like, heavy thematics to come into play with these movies.
No, it's not just, at all. I mean, like, the first one is very simple.
It is, but it does have
that. I mean, technically, this one's simple, too.
No, what I'm saying is it's, like, the reason why John Wick stands above other action movies that are similar is because it has those other details. It has a world that I find interesting. It has things that are going on with Reeves' character and what he's how he connects not only his trauma and grief, but other things, too, that the series finds ways to kind of interlace within the series. If another ballerina movie could also do that, cool. It doesn't have to do that, but I want it to do more to help it stand out and not just be a series of not super fun, but at least engaging action films.
Yeah. I think, like, one of the things that does make it stand out, again, not a huge standout, but just that we've engaged with other people that are part of the same kind of underworld world that these are part of. And now they're introducing, like, other tribes to some degree, which I think is like a neat idea, but again, they don't really give you much on this.
Well, plus, and it felt more of like a necessity of like, we can't use any of the other ones we've already seen because then it complicates the timeline and the story for John Wick. So we have to introduce something that has no effect whatsoever anywhere else that we can get rid of and could have impact on something that happens after 4, maybe. But, you know, it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things until it does.
Which is why more of this could be interesting. Or if we set the movie to begin with ahead of the other John Wick films, it could have been interesting. Because then you can have more room to play with the universe. Because I do legit find the universe interesting. But this movie doesn't really do much. And we've already said Gabriel Byrne's not exactly lighting the fire under us.
Yeah. And it would be cool, like, if the next one, too. Because obviously, if they do bring back John Wick and they make John Wick Chapter 5 before A Ballerina 2... then maybe you have the next, you know, chapter of John Wick involving something that also involves Eve Macaro, and either they're both after the same person, or they're both after different people whose, like, story somehow entwines, and so at some point you get them working together. Right. Maybe at some point they're still, like, at odds, you know, for whatever reason, not necessarily fighting each other, but, like, getting in each other's way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if there's necessity created, then that makes it at least feel like there's an organic reason for both movies to, like, commingle with each other. That's, like, that's something, at least, as opposed to just, like, random story.
Right.
But, Abe, what's your favorite action movie scene in this movie?
It would have to be the flamethrower fight, to be honest. Mostly because of what you guys talked about, but again, the escalation of it, and then also, I was not sure what she was looking at when she kind of says, like, cool, and I was pleasantly surprised. Because, again, we've seen, like, the dragon breath in John Wick 4, and I was like, well, this is amazing. Like, you know, aerial shot, and just the way that you have the choreography going. But quite honestly, like, I'm just impressed when movies have people that actually can fight in it. And we talked about the Karate Kid Legends last week. Everyone can fight there, but they just edited it weird. And this one, everyone can fight except for maybe, like, you know, Ana de Armas, who is an actress. But they edited it very well, and it's very like you can legibly see all the fighting in action. And I also want to point out that the guy, he's like a stuntman who's also been in Barry. He's back in this one too. So he's just like the never ending. I guess he does die in John Wick 1. So I guess he's just back all the time. Recurring character.
I can't think of his name, but I know who you're talking.
I can't think of his name. Yeah, but he's a real martial artist for real. Yeah.
I think that mine was actually the grenades, because I knew the flamethrower was coming because of the trailer.
Oh, okay.
But so the grenades, I was very surprised by, and the way that they kept coming up with a way for her to like shield herself from the explosion, but use them to her advantage was pretty cool. I was particularly like taken aback, like, oh shit, when she like pulled a table over and threw the grenade and like he blew up like on top of the table.
I really enjoyed that too. I didn't know that the flamethrowers were in the trailer. I'm glad I didn't watch the trailers then. But yeah, there was also a point where I was like, are these flashbangs or are they like full on grenades? And they're full on grenades.
Daniel Bernhardt's the name of the stunt actor.
That's the guy, yeah. Who's in Barry and John Wick 1.
Barry and John Wick. He's recently in The Killer's Game, Matrix Resurrections.
Yeah.
Nobody as Busgoon.
That tracks. He's a part of that fight
team.
He's
in all the
87
North production.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's part of that fight team.
Oh, I will say the brief, I think, good use of comedy was when you realize that everyone in Hallstatt is a killer. So, like, seeing the mom come back after she took her kid out and, like, lock and load it out of her minivan and stuff, like, that was amusing.
Yeah.
But it also kind of felt like it was from a Jason Statham movie as opposed to John Wick.
Yeah. A Hot Fuzz type situation too.
Yeah.
I thought
a Hot Fuzz for sure, actually, same. Just because of the nature of like being a small town or whatever. But like, no, it does. Like, I agree with you. It does speak to the weirdness of the John Wick world, where like there's this secret society of just assassins that exists, and anyone could be one. But like the rest of the world's like, whatever. I don't really kind of pass this by. And this is like, well, what if a whole town was just in on it? Like, that's fun.
I also, unanswerable question, I was like, I wonder if they have ever had any hotels that had vacancies, but maybe they're just like, no, we don't want anybody here, so there are no vacancies at all, ever. And you just, it's a time that you just drive through to get a coffee, but you can't sleep there, just to preserve their own sanity, I suppose.
Okay.
But I don't know. I mean, like, maybe they need some extra cash from all the travelers.
As far as the action scenes go, I agree with the flamethrowers thing. That is my favorite one, just because it's I like that they're like extended lightsabers the way they use them. Like these giant bursts of flames, and they're like the way they duel with them is like, that's creative. I didn't like, the trailer showed me that there's going to be flamethrower stuff, but like the extent this goes, I was still impressed.
Yeah, the sound that the flamethrower makes when it is ignited is very cool.
Yeah, good visual on that front.
And I'll still like, we haven't mentioned the director, but the director's Len Wiseman, who hasn't made a film since that well-respected Total Recall remake.
Oh, that was him?
He sure was. But, like, as much as I don't like that movie and I'm not fond of the Underworld films, he made Live Free or Die Hard as well, the fourth Die Hard. I do think he has an eye for action. I can't say he has an eye for action the same way that, like, Stahelski does, but he, like, the action sequences he provides in his film, specifically the Die Hard one, he knows how to get the camera to be where it needs to be. So, like, I give credit where credit's due as far as his involvement in a film like this, even if Stahelski did have to come on and reshoot a good portion of the movie.
Do you know what a good portion is defined as?
Not yet. Okay. not until that news story comes out.
I'm curious if it's, like, actually just, like, ghost directing kind of situation.
I'll wait for that Monday quarterbacking report that, like, gets into the nitty-gritty of what happened with John, with Ballerina and why it had to be delayed an entire year.
Okay.
But even in the trailer, I saw this, but like that scene where she puts the guy behind the door and then blows up the grenade, that rules to me. Like, that's such a fun, like, little beat. And yes, Brad, with over like the table as well, it's like, yeah, that's cool. Like, that's just fun stuff.
What's interesting is I'm not necessarily sure how soon that story is going to come out, because even during the press run, when Ben Pearson from Slash Home spoke to Len Wiseman, he specifically said that there weren't really like extensive reshoots like people are thinking, that they were additional shoots in Budapest that they did for just the traditional extra stuff. So I imagine that even if there were, that's probably something that they're like not going to, you know, be very forthcoming with.
Sure, I can understand. Be a little bit tight-lipped about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
like Len actually did direct this. Yeah.
Like credit where credit's due. Like his name is on the thing. If they want to take his name off,
credit,
or do something like that, things could happen.
Yeah. But there was a point when he also indicated that he got sick for a little bit. He had a health scare, and so he was gone for a couple weeks. Chad covered those sequences that they were doing during that time. So
got it. Yeah.
Which is, you know, there's so many things go into making movies and stuff like this and things like. But like when a movie gets delayed a year, you start to question like what exactly went down or went on. So it's like.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's like a Captain America Brave New World situation.
Yeah, it sounds like more like logistical things or whatnot.
Oh, yeah, I see what you guys are saying. Yeah.
Anyway, anything else on From the World of John Wick Home Arena?
I mean, I saw it in regular theater. I don't know if you guys saw it in premium formats.
I had a crappy theater. I was disappointed. We had the smallest theater in our AMC, and it's AMC, so I knew the sound was going to suck.
Oh.
But it did. Which was annoying because it screened a bunch of times and like we only got like the last screening possible apparently.
Yeah, everyone's watching Lilo and Stitch live action.
I mean, honestly, those are the ones that and Mission Impossible are taking up all the big screens right now. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, they didn't have room for a fancier screening. Yeah. So
not in Dolby.
Yeah, I didn't. Mine wasn't in Dolby either, but it was at a decent AMC where it was like one of the actual like biggest screen theaters.
Oh,
so.
Nice. Okay.
I almost considered seeing it. I just didn't have time this weekend, but I almost considered seeing it again just so I could get a better because like the theaters by me are better than the one I saw it in. So I'd rather see a better, like maybe I'd think more of it if I actually saw it again.
Sure,
but we'll see. Maybe we'll see if I get around to it again. But Abe, did you see it in a?
No, I saw it in regular theater, but it was only playing in Dolby, and I didn't want to go see it in Dolby mostly because I was like, well, the sound is going to be fine. Like I know what these things sound like. And if they're not going to optimize anything visually, then no need to watch it.
You're a 40X or die guy, right? So
100%, yeah. So I want that seat shaken. I want the smell of whatever is powering that gas.
They don't do the smells as much anymore, which
sucks. That's right, yeah.
That was a big part of the 40X.
So. I want that hot air blowing in my face from the flamethrower.
That they do.
That'd be gross. It's like, oh, wow, this air is hot.
All right. Well.
I didn't know John Wick smelled like peanuts.
Now you're gonna have like this Pavlovian response every time you see John Wick. Now it's like, I really want a sandwich, PB&J.
Go to Texas Roadhouse. Is John Wick here? For those who don't know, that's the restaurant where the peanuts used to be on the floor.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
they stopped doing that after COVID.
Do they still have unlimited peanuts over at Five Guys?
It's managed more now, yeah. But they still do.
Yeah, because before you could just like go grab a cup and just like again dump all the shells on the ground.
Well, actually, what I would do is I would take the big bag and slam it on the ground and
just
then
break
just,
it all
yeah.
open.
Yeah,
peanuts for everybody.
Rapper's like, if it dies, it dies.
This is 2019. I don't care if I'm eating off the ground. It's all good. I'm never gonna die.
A year later, everything's changed.
What's that pop star lyric? I'm gonna live forever. when do people go and see From the World of John Wick, Ballerina? Brad, when should people see this movie?
Go ahead and see it in your time. You know, you don't have to rush out and see it. I do think it's probably worth seeing in a theater. It's one of those movies that's fun to experience people and see how they react to certain action moments and, you know, the violence on display. But you know, it's also not the kind of thing where it's like, it's so good that you got to see it immediately. And there's not even anything in it where it's like, you're going to be spoiled if you don't see it, you know, which is almost like, another hash mark against it. It's like, oh, there's nothing that's like, man, people are going to be like ranting and raving about that makes you want to see it immediately. So, see it in theaters if you can, if you can't, I'm sure it'll be available for you to watch soon enough.
Very good. Abe.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a little bit more than you guys. I would say like Dollar Theater or Matinee. I mean, again, I agree with Brad that his assessment is spot on. You know, there's some really cool visuals here. I wasn't as big on Anna de Armas the way that you were, Aaron, too. So, yeah, I mean, like, you know, if you're a fan of the franchise or a fan of checking this out, check it out. You probably won't be disappointed. It's entertaining enough.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think, you know, it's summer action. It doesn't ask a whole lot. It looks good on a big screen. Would I say see it in a theater right away? No. Would I say catch it as a matinee? Yes. Like, it's fine. So there we are. All right. That was our review for the World Job Only Ballerina. Abe, what time is it now?
I think it's time for a quick game here. Brad, little known fact, Aaron submitted that for the sound that plays when she unsheathes a samurai sword. And nice. Len was like, Aaron, that doesn't make any sense. So, again, they couldn't pay Aaron for that.
Also, how did you get my email?
Oh, Aaron's connected. He has the yellow pages.
I was just like ldog.wiseman@gmail.com, and I was right.
Yeah, that's dog, a good. That's a
dog. It's at Gmail.
That's a very good guess.
Dog DAWG, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I've been getting around. I've been using DOGG.
Ldog, you know. I have a game for you guys.
Yes.
It is called Nightclubbing. Or shooting, okay. Stabbing, or fighting.
What?
These are all movies that have a nightclub sequence, a nightclub action sequence, to be more specific. And what I'm going to do to you is give you the option. You can either ask for a tagline or a quote, and I'll read one of those things, and you have to guess the movie based off said tagline or quote.
Ooh.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. So, Brad, you're our guest this week. By the way, if you feel you know the answer, buzz in if your name, then say the answer. Uh-huh. Brad, you're our guest this week, so I'm going to let you give the initial pick. Do you want a tagline or a quote for this first one?
I'll start with a quote.
Okay. The quote for this one is, you working again?
I mean, Abe.
Oh, shit.
John Wick?
John Wick is a
quote. I forgot that we had to buzz in.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Abe, you're on the board.
The Kevin Nash line.
And let me make my scoreboard real quick.
Okay.
Okay. The tagline, by the way, was don't set him off.
I wouldn't have gotten it if it was just the tagline. Okay. I would have been like, Die Hard?
All right. Abe, you got that one. So you get to pick. You want a quote or a tagline?
Quote.
A guy gets on the MTA here, LA, and dies. Think anybody notice?
Abe. The one with the coyote in the middle of the road. Collateral?
Collateral.
Yeah.
Correct answer. There you go.
Nice. Yes.
It started like any other night. It's the tagline. No.
I wouldn't have gotten it either. That's a horror movie tagline.
All right. Abe, once again, you get to keep picking. You want a quote or a tagline?
Quote.
You better wake up. The world you live in is just a sugar-coated topping. There's another world beneath it, the real world. If you want to survive it, you better learn to pull the trigger.
I don't know this.
Yeah, I don't know this one either, man.
Abe?
Okay.
The Amateur?
At what point did anybody say that in the
Amateur? No, like when he's telling Robbie Malik to, like, you know, pull the trigger.
That's too exciting for the Amateur. The Amateur's like, oh, we were so sad.
I mathematically calculated the breaking glass, so you're going to die now.
Here's the tagline of this movie. The power of an immortal, the soul of a human, the heart of a hero.
That's a good tagline.
Brad?
Is it The Old Guard?
Incorrect.
Abe?
Keep in mind, I'll emphasize nightclub sequence.
Oh, I mean, I don't, Abe?
Abe.
Highlander?
No, it's not Highlander. The answer is Blade. Blade.
I almost said Blade.
Of course, bullets.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Blabe, you missed that one, so I'll go to Brad. Brad, do you want a tagline or a quote?
Let's go with a tagline this time.
Okay. Welcome to a world without rules.
Could be a lot of movies.
I chose the less obvious tagline for some of these.
It has a nightclub sequence?
It has a club sequence.
Abe? The Matrix Reloaded?
Incorrect.
Right.
Matrix has rules.
But in the free world, do they?
Well, they're in the Matrix.
Don't look at the one in red.
I don't know. Yeah, that's true.
Here's the quote. Do I really look like a guy with a plan? You know what I am? I'm a dog chasing a car, Brad.
It's the Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Oh, wait. What was the tagline again?
Welcome to a world without rules.
Okay. I guess. Yeah. Yeah. The quote would really help me out.
What? Why so serious? Is a bit too obvious for that one?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I would have said the Batman.
Brad, you want a quote or a tagline for this next one?
Quote.
A quote. When I'm around you, I kind of feel like I'm on drugs. No.
Brad. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, wow. You got that one right away.
Not that I do drugs, unless you do drugs, in which case I do them all the time. All of them. That's the whole quote.
I only know bread makes you fat.
All right. You guys are tied.
Oh, no.
All right, Brad. Still yours. Quote or tagline?
Quote.
Okay. Might have given hints on this one, but we'll see. Okay. Please stop screaming.
Oh man.
I just saw this movie. Abe.
Yes.
Anora?
Anora is the
Nice, yeah.
Love is a Hustle is apparently the tagline.
I would not have gotten it from
that would have been pretty difficult. Yeah. All right, Abe, you
makes sense
control.
For it though. I'm gonna go with quote.
Quote.
Yeah.
Okay. I got my balls and I got my word, and I don't break it from anybody.
That sounds very familiar. I don't know it offhand though.
Yeah, I don't know it either.
I got my balls and I got my word.
Let me see if I could say it a different way. I got my balls and I got my word, and I don't break them from anybody.
That still doesn't help me.
Yeah, was that Sean Connery?
Yeah, I was like, Abe the Rock? There's no nightclub sequence in The Rock, though.
Here's the tagline. He loved the American dream with a vengeance.
I don't know this. With a vengeance? Like, is there an ellipses?
No. That's... I like that would make the difference for you.
You love the American dream. Ellipses with a vengeance.
Yeah, it's just a period and then with a vengeance.
With a vengeance? This and features, he's Sean Connery?
This features an actor we've talked about earlier in this episode. One that can go big if he wants to.
Can I get the tagline again?
He loved the American dream with a vengeance.
Oh, Brad.
Brad.
Is it Scarface?
Scarface is the correct answer.
All right. Your Cuban sounded more Scottish.
That sounds like your problem.
I wouldn't mind seeing Sean Connery in that role. It'd be great.
I got my balls. Say hello to my little friend. All right. Next one. Brad, you want a tagline or a quote?
Quote.
Quote. We have here... People come to the Oasis for all the things they can do, but they stay for all the things they can be. Yes, Brad?
Ready Player One.
Ready Player One.
I couldn't think of the fucking name of the movie. I was like, it's the one where he's blue.
An adventure too big for the real world.
I wouldn't have gotten it from the tagline either.
It's a pretty vague tagline.
I would have been like, Jaws?
That nightclub scene.
Jaws 19?
where Dreyfus and they're all dancing, and then Jaws comes in. It was like, wait a minute.
At Cafe 80s, yeah. They're dancing in the Cafe
80s. Yes. Okay. Brad, once again, tagline or quote?
Quote.
Quote. What day is it? The date.
I mean, Abe?
Abe.
The Terminator?
The Terminator.
Oh.
The correct answer.
What club are they at?
Tech Noir?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, yes. What are you talking about? So that's where they meet.
Because I forget what the name of the club is in Kindergarten Cop.
Okay.
Anyway.
The whole thing, because there's a line in between, but like, what day is it? The date! What year? I like that part a lot.
It's good, Kyle Reese.
Because then the cop looks at him like, what? So what'd you ask me? The year? All right, Abe, you're back in control. You're both tied still, by the way.
Quote, please.
Quote. That woman... deserves her revenge, and we deserve to die.
Brad. Kill Bill, Volume 1.
Volume 1 is the correct.
It is Volume 1. Okay, because I was like, I don't know what Volume 1 or which one it is. I was going to say Volume 2.
I had to think about saying, but then it's at the end of Volume 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, Bud says it.
And he technically says it again in 2, but 1 has a nightclub scene in it. So.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Brad, board's yours.
Quote.
Quote. Where is it? Okay. I keep telling you, you listen to me more, you live longer.
Abe. Just from your Asian accent, I'm going to say...
I didn't put an accent on it.
Jones and the Temple of Doom?
It is Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
I heard a short round accent.
There was no accent. I read it how it's written. That's. I keep telling you, you listen to me more, you live longer. It's written that way.
I didn't hear anything either. Yeah, you're safe.
Abe, back to you.
Quote, please.
Quote. Somebody stole your pajamas?
Brad? The Mask.
The Mask is the correct answer. All right. Okay, so Brad, you currently have the lead. This is the last This is the last one that's next.
Right.
So if Abe, you get this, it's a tie, and we got to go tiebreaker. But Brad gets this, the game's over. So here we go. Right. Brad, do you want a quote or a tagline?
A quote.
good, because the tagline might not help at all. I don't know if this quote's going to help either, though.
I hope that the tagline's like, seat in theaters.
All right. Okay. You know, it's strange. Somebody else asked me if I was afraid today. I am afraid. I'm afraid of what happens when somebody pushes me too far. Somebody just like you, because I know what happens next.
Oh, man.
I do not know this.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Badass line, though, right?
That is a great line. Yeah, but it did not ring any immediate bells.
The tagline is, take it outside.
I still don't know. Can I hear the quote again, please?
Brad.
Oh, Brad?
Roadhouse?
Roadhouse is the correct answer!
Big winner!
Dalton!
I wouldn't have gotten that, because it's just not in my... I haven't seen that movie that many times.
The tagline actually did help.
It does, because you can picture... like, because the poster's just him standing against the wall. Yeah. You can see it saying, take it outside, Roadhouse. Like, it's there. Like, but... All right, well, Brad, Abe, you've been put up a good fight here. It's a close game, but Brad, it's you came out victorious.
Yeah, good
night clubbing. You won night clubbing or shooting, stabbing, or fighting.
I will say I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get any quotes from Night at the Roxbury, but there isn't any shooting or stabbing. So,
well, so this is what happened. Initially, my game was called Dance Fight, and I was going to do movies that feature either fights on the dance floor or dance fighting, and all I could literally think of was like Zoolander and like Night of the Roxbury did kind of cause like that kind of, but I couldn't find like more that would like keep that going.
Yeah, it's a good game though. Okay, yeah, I really enjoyed specific. It.
Yeah. All right. Well, good job, guys. Thank you very much. Yeah. That was fun. Let's move on now. Let's get some out now feedback. This is where I go over the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast. You guys gave us the answers to the questions we asked here, and you also gave us some questions we could work with as well. Brad, feel free to throw in any answers you might have as we go through these.
First question is, what are your favorite movie spinoffs? David Malouf has Hobbs and Shaw, an underappreciated classic. And isn't Rogue One technically a spinoff? Maybe the best spinoff of all time. Chris Cleland has the Lego Batman movie, Machete, and Logan. Jeffrey Webb writes U.S. Marshals, Creed, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. Also, couldn't the Avengers technically be considered a spinoff of Iron Man? If it counts, I'd add it to my list, too. And lastly, Philip Hurd writes, The Bourne Legacy.
Woof.
I'm going to say no to that Avengers point. Bourne Legacy.
I'm going to say no to Bourne Legacy.
He wants those chems.
He's the chems,
chems.
I need my chems.
I can't remember anything with those chems. Where's Jose when we need him?
I'll just add, Terrence and I just talked about The War of the Gargantuas yesterday for Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla, so I'll just throw that out there because that's a spinoff of the Godzilla franchise.
Deadpool,
yeah.
Yeah, spinoff of X-Men, yeah.
And Split.
Split.
Oh, that's a good call out there.
Oh, and Creed.
Yeah, we got a couple Creed mentions, but yeah, Creed certainly, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, did someone say Creed? I missed it. I was too busy.
You're focused on
one life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so mad about Bourne Legacy.
Exactly. Yeah, you're just really upset about the chems.
All right. What are some great cinematic uses of flamethrowers? Mark Hoffmeyer has The Thing. Chris Gillen has, quite a few. Ripley destroying the Alien Queen's babies in Aliens. The Doof Warriors guitar in Mad Max Fury Road. The awesome Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood taking down Sadie in Glorious Balls of Flames. Academy Award winner Mickey Madsen. Glorious Ball of Flames. David E. Maloof writes The Thing and The Blood Test, and let us never forget Leo's flamethrower Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Luke Thompson writes DC Cab. And Philip Hurd has clearing out the German bunkers on D-Day in Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
And Christopher Estrada writes The 14 Fists of McCluskey from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood once again.
But he named the movie within the movie.
What's a lot of love for the Leo roles.
Yeah. The Thing is a great answer.
Thing's a great answer. Brad, you were thinking Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah, they said pretty much all the ones that I would have done.
Yeah. Anything else coming to mind, Aaron?
I mean the ballerina one is very good. That's why I came with this question. Yeah. But I'm trying to think of like others that are equally great. I mean, flamethrowers is such a specific kind of thing.
Yeah, especially like in films. Because I know like in TV they had it in Chernobyl, which is like really heavily used.
The beginning of Lethal Weapon 4, right? That whole flamethrower business.
Hong Kong, you'd already be dead, Aaron.
The movie Bellflower. That's a movie I'm a big fan of.
Oh yeah, yeah. You spoke to the director.
Oh yeah. That was my first Sundance, and that was my first Sundance movie actually.
Oh neat.
Look at you guys just having fun over movies.
I met with them later on at Comic-Con when they brought the Medusa to Comic-Con, which was pretty neat. The car that they used, not the actual Gorgon.
I was thinking like the person that you're not supposed to look at? Yeah. Well, the next question here is, what are your favorite Angelica Houston movies? David Maloof has the tragic character in Crimes and Misdemeanors. Philip Hurd writes the Royal Tenenbaums for sure. And Chris Glidden also echoes the Royal Tenenbaums. Angelica Houston movies.
I mean, Adam's Family Values, guys. Come
She's
on.
She's great as Morticia. Say, like, Morticia.
Yeah. What are we doing? What are we doing here?
Yeah. Red Hot Pokers.
No. No, Morticia was definitely like a thought right away for this. I mean, Crimes and Misdemeanors is my favorite Allen film, so and she is very good in it. And it is tragic indeed. But yeah, her collaborations with Wes Anderson, I think, are all very solid.
Yeah, even Darjeeling Limited.
So, and obviously, I'm a huge Life Aquatic fan, so I'm seeing her in there. All right, who are your favorite cinematic ballerinas? Dan Maloof has Natalie Portman in Black Swan. Philip Hare writes The Lady from the Red Shoes. And Chris adds, yep, Natalie Portman.
Oh, Billy Elliot.
Ballerinas, Billy Elliot. Yeah. You want to do ballet?
I mean, the way that his father just starts crying at the end, I was like, kills me every time.
It's a great movie, Billy Elliot.
It really is, yeah.
It's very good.
The women in Suspiria who have nothing bad happen to them whatsoever.
Both versions of the movie.
Both versions, yeah.
Yeah, they just learn how to dance here. Nothing comes out of them.
Yeah, or goes into them. Either way, you know, it's fine.
Except for the mood for dance.
That elephant in Fantasia, right? You know?
Was that? I guess so, yeah.
It's doing ballet.
Yeah, I had to think about it. Yeah. Anything from you, Brad?
No, I got nothing else.
All right, the next question here is, who are some TV stars you'd like to see get some more big screen exposure? Mark Hoffmeyer has anybody from Andor. Jeffrey Webb has Kyle Chandler, Maurice Bernard, Aldis Hodge, Claire Danes. She's had plenty of lead roles in films, but I feel like her most notable and recent roles have been on TV. Also, purely a hypothetical since he's dead, but I'd also add Michael Landon.
That's a poll. Michael Landon.
Highway to Heaven. David Maloof has, that's a tough one because there's so much crossover these days, unlike the 70s or 80s or 90s. I guess I'd like to see more Vincent D'Onofrio in films, even though he has a very prolific career in movies.
Yeah, I feel like he's all over the place, but fair enough. I mean,
yeah, I guess he's been doing a lot of Daredevil lately. But
I do like D'Onofrio, so like I'm never against seeing more of him. That's for sure. Yeah. I asked this in reference to Norman Reedus, by the way, since he's like been so in TV world for the longest time because
he used to be video game world.
He is stranding with death.
Right. For me, it's anybody who is like doing comedy on TV because comedy movies aren't big anymore. So, like, yeah, anybody who's doing a straight up comedy series or limited series, like, give them movies again. Just please.
I would heavily agree. Yeah.
I know, like, what? Like, Nate Bargatze has a movie coming out next year. Like,
does he?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I'm glad.
Yeah, I completely agree. Give more comedians, like, the chance to do something.
Yeah.
Give them a dirty work level budget and let them run with it.
Yeah, exactly.
All these hookers in the trunks of these cars.
I've never seen so many dead hookers.
who's the car owner?
Keckner.
Is it Bob Saget?
It's okay. Keckner.
Okay, yeah, David Keckner. Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Saget is in it. He directed in it. Where's he in Dirty Work?
I think he's just the Alcoholics Anonymous or like the Narcotics Anonymous.
It's like something like that, right? He's like leading them group.
Where he's like, man, I've done some terrible things. Like I've sucked dick for.
That's half baked.
That's half baked. Right. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I actually don't think he has a cameo in Dirty Work.
Okay. All right.
Well, maybe the dirty cut that's coming out that I definitely ordered right away when I saw that announcement.
Is there really a re-release?
There's a re-release coming that's not only 4K, it's literally the R-rated version that they never got to release. They went in and redid all the stuff that they wanted to do for the other version of that movie, and I'm very excited to see it.
Interesting. Okay.
At Monsterpalooza, the Vinegar Syndrome, that's the company putting it out, the guys were there, they were talking about, they have like an hour-long documentary going over all the whole like process of it and everything.
I gotta get that ordered.
I'm very excited about that one.
Cool.
Well, next question here. What are your favorite unconventional weapons you've seen used in fights in movies? Only Dan Maloof responded. I thought this would get a lot of hits, but here we go. Dan Maloof writes, the Joker's magic trick of a pencil in the Dark Knight. Anton Chigurh's Captain Bolt pistol from No Country for Old Men.
That, yeah, that cattle bolt thing was pretty crazy. Pretty gnarly.
Yeah, the records in Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah. Don't stop me now.
It's John Wick is the one where he uses a book, right?
Yeah, Bourne too.
Well, yeah, he does. Yeah, John Wick does it. I think of Jason Bourne with books.
Yeah, but he like magazines. Kills Boban, the tall.
He kills Boban with the book. Yeah, he fucks him up.
Yeah. Really, Anton Chigurh's oxygen tank.
Yeah.
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 That thing is pretty crazy. Unconventional weapons. I mean, you know, Weapon X, I guess. The next question here. What are some what other movie series would you like to see John Wick pop up in? David Maloof has Mission Impossible, Fast and the Furious, Sonic the Hedgehog, Doctor Strange, James Bond versus John Wick. He put question marks after all these, so I have to, you know, speak it this way.
Air Bud?
Yes!
There's no rule that says assassins can't play basketball.
Yeah, I mean they're going to win the state championship for sure.
He's going to be even more pissed if his basketball playing dog gets murdered.
Oh, my. And the puppies, too.
You're on the team, too? Yes, I'm 7.
Philip Hurd has the Muppets.
Perfect
good,
answer.
That'd be a good one. Yeah.
Perfect.
I mean, he's playing the drums with the animals. It'd be great. Chris Clinton finally writes, James Bond or Predator? I mean, Predator would be interesting. I feel like Predator's kind of got the upper hand all the time. But
are we talking about which franchise we prefer or which one we want to have sex with?
Both.
Which one John Wick should pop up in?
Oh, sorry, I thought we were on a different subject.
That applies to, I guess. But yeah, I mean,
I would mind seeing John Wick try to take on a predator.
Yeah, a yautja.
Yeah, that's right. Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah. I wasn't sure how you pronounce the J part.
It's pronounced.
Got it. All right. Right.
Yeah, the Muppets is an ideal answer. I like that one a lot.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Dave Maloof writes for our questions here. Should there be or should there not be a John Wick 5? Why or why not?
I mean, he's been announced, but also, isn't he dead?
I mean, it's assumed, but yeah, no guarantees.
No,
yeah.
Has anyone ever really dead in movies?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I've seen Scream 8.
Here's my thought. Like, given the quality of John Wick films, in terms of just seeing another movie called John Wick with Keanu Reeves in it and Chad Stahelski directing, I wouldn't walk in worried about the quality of the movie, even if it's just from an action standpoint. The only issue I ran into is, like, beyond just the fact that he's presumably dead, what else is left for him to accomplish? That's where my head's at. Like, if he's taken on the high table, like, what else is there to do? Like, he's grieved. He's taken on everyone that was against him. Unless, like, the batshit idea of, like, he has to fight his way out of hell actually comes to fruition, I don't know what else we do with this character.
Maybe John Wick has a brother.
Don.
Yeah, Don no, Wick.
It's clearly Jim Wick.
You could go that route of just giving him like a ridiculous brother that everyone thought was dead and
like, part three.
There's certainly there's always some random play you can make. And again, if a movie comes out called John Wick 5 and it has all these people in it, I'm there. I'm not going to ask that too. Movie. It's just more of, I don't like offhand know what that would be. So like in a matter of I'd say should not, especially because 4 is such a fucking high point for that, like for action, like in this decade. It's like, what else?
And for costume design.
And I mean, it's so good. Everything in all respects.
Everything is
so
great.
It's like I'm never going to say like should or should. It's like, it's a weird question to ask, but it's like, you know, like if they make it, I'll see it. But
it was an original idea. It spun like 4 sequels and a spinoff. I mean, keep doing it, I guess.
I guess here's a question for you, Abe. Would you rather see a sequel to John Wick or another ballerina movie?
The former. Okay. I'd probably rather see more John Wick. I mean, not that anything against ballerina.
Here's an idea. Mm-hmm. Earlier, someone said they wanted to see more of the Andor cast in movies. Make Diego Luna John Wick's brother, and you call it John Wick Hermanos.
There we go.
I love it.
There we go.
There we go.
Green light.
All right.
Day of the Salado.
John Wick. What is it?
Hermanos.
Hermanos.
Yeah. And Diego Luna keeps calling John Wick Juan.
Juan, my brother.
Juan. I love it. The last question here is from Mark Harfmeyer, friend of the show, who writes, are there any catapults in Ballerina? If not, what moment could have used a catapult or a trebuchet?
Yeah, trebuchet.
Same thing for jet ski action scene and large sharks.
Okay, so first off, catapult or trebuchet, instead of like whatever final confrontation they have with Gabriel Byrne, I feel like they shouldn't even ever like meet. And instead, like, she just knows where he is in, like, the castle at the top of the town that they're in.
Uh-huh.
And at one point just, like, launches, like, a bad guy off a grenade strapped to him or something, like, throws through his front window, and he's like, oh, and then he blows up. Like, I think that'd be fun.
You don't want to write a funny line for her or anything like that?
No, I think his reaction being, like...
Mail's delivered!
The first John Wick where what's his name? Dragon Tattoo responds, oh, and then hangs up the phone.
Oh, yeah.
I think a callback to that would be fun.
Michael Nyquist?
Nyquist, thank you, yeah.
R.E.P. Catapult, sure. I think a catapult could have been used when they're at the Continental. You know, she gets around by catapult, like travel by map, but instead travel by catapult.
That's how she travels.
Yeah, exactly. But she needs help. And there's also a catapult at every roof of every Continental in different states. And then jet ski or large shark. I mean, I think you could have used a large shark. Definitely. There's a part where she's fighting somebody on a small little frozen pond. A shark could have been great there.
Like, yeah, like she kills the guy on said pond, and then, like, the shark comes out and just kind of gives her a nod. He's like, game recognizes game.
I was thinking he's different, but I actually really like that the shark has nothing to do with the kill. Yeah, he's there to, like, wink at
her. I've seen plenty of shark kills. I haven't seen a shark be like, I get it.
Nice.
If you think this is Mark's last jet ski question, you'd be wrong, because we're saving at least one. Anyway. All right, that's out of feedback. And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find everything I do on my personal Substack page at hodazeek.substack.com. Everything I do ends up over there. I am the co-host of Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla. My friend and fellow film critic Terrence Johnson and I talk about the Godzilla films on a bi-weekly basis. We just released our latest episode, Ghidorah, the Three-Headed Monster. I write for Wheel of Entertainment and Why So Blue, and I'm on all the socials at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff over my Instagram, abe.mua, and Twitter, x.com/wallersmoose, hashtag ballet shoes.
Okay. Brad Oman, where can people find more of you online?
Still putzing around on Twitter at Ethan_Anderton, kind of active on Blue Sky, but I've gotten worse at it. Let's be honest. It's just, it's hard out here for a pimp. And I have my own podcast, a couple actually, one called Go Flix Yourself, where me and my friends Ben and Nate talk about the most recent movies we've seen and generally just have a good time. And then also the 10 to 1 podcast, which is a Saturday Night Live podcast where me and Ben and Nate review new episodes of SNL. And now that the show's on hiatus, we're getting ready to do our season 50 recap and ranking of the best episodes and cast members and sketches. And then we're figuring out what we're going to do with the summer. I don't know if we're going to dig back into old episodes. We still have to finish the movies. We've got, like, I think 3 or 4 of them left to talk about, so we'll probably do that. But if you like Saturday Night Live, it's a lot of fun. We talk about it over there. And then also, I'm on slashfilm.com. And the Slash from Weekly podcast. And if you happen to like junk food, like soft drinks and chips and things like that, you can go to Instagram at Look at Brad's Junk, and I post about all sorts of new chips and cookies and soft drinks, and it's a real hoot.
Subscribing right now.
It's a real joy to be a part of that. That's delivered nothing but gold over the past couple of years. You can find all the other episodes out now and every day on iTunes, Audible, Spotify, and Stitcher.
SoundCloud, Podomatic, and HHWLOD.
Feel free to email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Check out our Facebook and our Blue Sky at Outnow Podcast.
And Twitter and Instagram at outnow_podcast. Brad, thanks very much for joining us this week.
Thank you, Brad.
Always a joy to be here, guys.
Great job on the game.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, congrats once again. Happy to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks to listeners for listening. Next week, we'll be talking How to Train Your Dragon. I think that's how you say it.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Hey.
When does this episode come out?
Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Do you want to give a little thing? Tiny thing?
Sure. Go for it.
Yeah, an exclusive.
Exclusive.
It's pretty good. It's better than any of the Disney live action remakes, but it is almost exactly the same movie as the original How to Train Your Dragon. So there you go.
Okay, well, we'll see how we feel about it next week when we talk about it. But yeah,
put it on the poster, Bradford Armand, same as the original.
But
But yeah, that's gonna do it for this week's episode. So until next time, so long
and goodbye. Just some dancing, ballerina dancing, and then are you who they say they are? Wait, what? Are you the Baba Yaga? That's not what they say. Are you him? Yes. And then just going into a whole bunch of action ballerina while tiny dancers are just playing in the background. And from the world of John Wick, ballerina.
That was perfect. It was just like the trailer.
I think that's about right. Yeah, yeah.
Adorable.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Right.
Nailed it with the Elton John part.
Yeah. He wants those chems.
He's the chems.
He's
yeah.
Those chems.
I need my chems.
I can't remember anything with those chems.